Can a survey change the future? Maybe this one can. Cannabis education is inconsistent at best and missing or misleading at worst. How can we make cannabis education better? What if we ask people who use or are thinking about using cannabis a bunch of questions? What if we ask pharmacists who could be teaching people about cannabis a bunch of questions? And then, what if the answers from those questions were used to help pharmacists teach people about cannabis better? Well, this is exactly what pharmacists as cannabis educators, or PACE, are doing. And PACE needs you to fill out a survey. PACE needs as many people as possible to fill out a survey. PACE needs you to fill out a survey on or before May 12th. This is a limited time offer for you to help change the future of cannabis education. To participate, go to promo.reefermed.ca. That's promo, P-R-O-M-O.reefermed.ca.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
Hey, Trevor, how's it going?
Good. So we know that you've been traveling around seeing relatives. I went on a bit of a tour around Manitoba. I got to Winnipeg, saw Doris's mom, sister, and my niece. I had my, you know, everyone's had these by now, I feel, but I had my holy Dinah, I'm doing everything wrong in pandemic world moments. You know, we stayed in a hotel and that was fine. I even did that during the pandemic. Previously, you could go down to the front desk and sort of grab a breakfast and bring it up to your room, you know, a year ago when we were taking my daughter to school. But this time it was everyone went down to the breakfast buffet room together. I was in a room with people, lots of them together eating. Kind of freaked me out a little bit. And then as my daughter picked it and it was a bit of a rainy day, we went to the art gallery. That wasn't so bad. There was lots of people, but big space. So I felt a little less claustrophobic. But then the next day we went to the Forks, downtown Winnipeg. Again, when it was outside, not so bad, but then it started pouring rain, so we all went inside, and there's lots of people inside. Anyway, I think I'm getting over this whole being in large crowds thing, but it was exciting. So yeah, then we went out to Pinawa, saw my parents first time in 2 years. So yeah, I'm hoping this is really the beginning of the end of the pandemic, not just the calm before the next wave, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. You know, we're traveling in Van Hoot. We're going, you know, we're in Flin Flon. We're traveling around. When do you wear your mask? When don't you wear your mask? It's all so confusing. And again, crowds of people. It's going to be a long time till I go to a mosh pit.
You know what? I bet you we could do a Kickstarter campaign or something. You know, money. We'll donate money to some charity. You know, if you raise X number of dollars, we'll put Kirk in a mosh pit and film it. I think people would pay to see that.
Well, why don't we have it? Why don't we do why don't we help finance us and fundraise for us? Put me in a mosh pit, and yeah, for Reefer Madness, you can help support Reefer Madness and sponsor me in the mosh pit. Yeah. That should be fun. So mosh pit athletics, obviously, you know, the average mosh pitter.
Sure. It's a segue.
What do you call someone in a mosh pit? A mosh pitter? A dancer?
George.
George the dancer is in the mosh pit. Last time I saw him dance, man, he was burning calories. So yes, I think there's a segue in there for athleticism. So you read a paper. I really enjoyed it. I also read it a couple days ago. Interesting paper.
Yeah. So let's go back before the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, that was really in 2021. There was a sprinter who made the news, Kirk. She was American. She was fast. She had exciting hair, but that's not why she made the news. Why did she make the news?
Didn't she consume cannabis, legal cannabis, recreationally?
Yes. So Sha'Carri Richardson, obviously fantastic athlete, probably would have been a medalist if she had been at the Tokyo Olympics, was not allowed to go by the U.S. Olympic Committee because there was cannabis in her system. And suddenly everybody's talking about cannabis and athleticism again. You know, it's just like back in Ross Revliati days.
Michael Phelps days.
Or, you know. And that he actually comes up in the interview. But the part I liked is I was listening to an interview on CBC with Perdita Felicien, a famous hurdler of Canada's. And she was saying how, you know, she had heard, I'm going to get his name right, Alan Vernac, who apparently is a Canadian who is the medical lead of WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. And she said cannabis and athletics, no big deal. I said, wow, you know, maybe we could interview him. And with a little bit of digging, he was on this paper. But the guy we got instead, nothing against Dr. Vernac, we got Dr. Mark Ware. Now, I'm going to actually pull out his biography because it is stupid long. And we'll do the quick official biography of Dr. Mark Ware. So he's been with Canopy Growth since 2018. He is the chief medical officer, Global Research Division. He has been with McGill University, one of the preeminent universities in the country, tenured associate professor and faculty of medicine. He got his medical degree at the University of the West Indies, trained in internal medicine, master's degree in epidemiology. Then he began evaluating the role of cannabis in pain management in McGill in 1999, way pre-legalization. Director of clinical research and pain management unit at McGill University Health Center for over 10 years. One of my favorite parts of his resume is he was one of the co-founders of the not-for-profit Canadian Consortium for the Investigation of Cannabinoids. He's in the been there, done that, bought the t-shirt category of everything. One of these other, I can't believe he agreed to talk to us. And he, you know, he throws out little things during the interview like, well, you know, when I was in Lausanne, Switzerland, sitting around the table with the IOC, you go, all right, he was in Lausanne with the IOC chatting about cannabis. I think he's the right person to chat to.
But the paper is interesting because it's a paper that basically is asking the IOC to say, what is it that bothers you about cannabis? Is it a performance enhancing drug? You know, we don't know. We don't think so. But I mean, certain drugs, I know that when I used to run marathons, I would train high. I would get high and then train. And some of my training runs were as long as 20 to 25 miles. So, you know, what they're finding is that there seems to be athletes that use cannabis. It depends on the sport. Some of the extreme sports, I guess, more extreme sports tend to have cannabis users. But I found it's a nuanced study. He's not necessarily saying that cannabis is good. He's saying that we need to understand more how cannabis is being used by athletes. That's how I got it.
Oh, absolutely. And there's lots to listen to, so listen hard to this. Two of the, and we'll talk about them more as we come out, but one of the things that I really like that he wants us to focus on, and I don't think he really has an answer, and, you know, that's a good researcher for you, is why? Why are there so many athletes using cannabis? So listen for what he has to say about that, and then I promise we will drop a few more John Montgomery references because, you know, Russell Manitoba's John Montgomery, skeleton racer, the Vancouver Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
Listen to the spirit of sport, against the spirit of sport.
And yes, how
close,
yes.
And how close that comes, yes, to what we talk about with stigma. But anyway, he can do a way better job and does a way better job than us. So let's listen to Dr. Mark Ware and athletes in the Olympics, and we'll come back out and throw a few of our thoughts in there. Dr. Ware, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Trevor. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So it was in the news recently, Sha'Carri Richardson, a U.S. sprinter, didn't make it to the Tokyo Olympics because some cannabis was found in her system. The interview I heard from her afterwards said, you know, she had some a death in the family and was basically using the cannabis several weeks outside of competition, kind of as a coping mechanism. And she didn't really feel it was performance enhancing and wasn't a big fan of doing all that training and then not making it to Tokyo. But we thought this gives us an excellent time to talk to you and see what your group thought about the literature around cannabis and elite athletes and, you know, where the science stands right now. So let's start with what were you, when you guys looked through the literature, what were you looking for when you first started looking for cannabis and elite athlete literature? What were you looking for? What was the idea behind it?
Yeah, so maybe some context behind the whole project, because it actually began when I was doing some communication back and forth with the medical director of the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA. Dr. Alan Verneck and I were back and forth about a couple of patients that he had, and he was looking after athletes who were suffering with pain management issues, and he was contacting me because of my experience and my work in the pain unit at the time at McGill University, interested to know what the evidence base behind cannabis and pain was. And so we got talking, and in around 2016, 2017, the International Olympic Committee, the IOC, convened a meeting to look at ways that athletes were managing pain. And cannabis was one of the topics which was brought in to be discussed. And I was brought into the IOC as a pain expert and somebody who knew a few things about cannabis to talk to them about this. And that began a series of very, very interesting meetings about the way that the IOC looks at sport, about the way they look at doping, about the way WADA regulates cannabis, in particular the cannabinoids THC and CBD. And it led to a series of papers, one of which was a review of the literature looking at whether we could actually find any evidence that THC was a performance-enhancing drug. As that's one of the criteria that the World Anti-Doping Agency and the IOC use to determine whether drugs should be prohibited or not. Long story short, we reviewed the literature extensively, published a paper finding that based on the evidence at that time, we could not find any proof that THC was a performance-enhancing substance. And therefore, on those grounds, we felt that we determined and concluded that THC wasn't performance-enhancing.
No, thank you. And actually, that goes nicely into, I'm going to be flipping through my papers a lot. So lots of things surprised me about the paper, but it wasn't until 2004 that, so it's been relatively recent that cannabis was a banned substance. You know, given my age or whatever, I remember 1998 with Ross Rebliati winning, losing, and getting back his gold medal in the Nagano Olympics because he had it in his system, but I think one of the big things at the time is it wasn't actually on the list for it to be made illegal. So I guess that happened shortly after that. But probably more germane to what we've got now. So the three WADA criteria, so potential to enhance sport performance, which you just talked about, actual or potential risk to health, and against the spirit of sport. So you guys found that wasn't actually performance enhancing, which may or may not be of interest to, you know, the general public, but I think the whole, does it cause any harm, is definitely of interest to everybody else. What did you guys look at and find out about whether or not cannabis is harming athletes who use it either recreationally or as a therapeutic?
Well, for that kind of question, you it's not just about athletes. It really refers to the safety of cannabinoids in general. And I think it's really important, Trevor, that when we speak about cannabis in this context, that we try to be really specific. Are we talking about THC or are we talking about CBD or both? And are we talking about oral formulations, inhaled formulations? All of these things have a role to play in assessing the risk of using a substance. THC, obviously the psychoactive compound found in, you know, the sort of more recreationally used and increasingly medically relevant cannabinoids. But CBD is undergoing a huge surge of interest right now. So we have to be careful. When we say cannabis is, we have to really be focused on, are we talking about THC or CBD? And CBD has been taken off the list from WADA for some time now. So it's really not a drug of interest from a performance. So we're talking about specifically THC. And for that, you know, what are the safety, those safety risks that we know? There's acute risks from, you know, the acute intoxication with THC, longer term risks if you use it a lot. For the most part, it's a remarkably safe compound. The exception being, you know, young people using it when they're, you know, teenagers and early adolescents, using early, often and heavily. So it's actually a remarkably safe compound. And for most of these athletes who are extremely fit, extremely healthy, it doesn't appear. And, you know, if it's used in an oral form, particularly, it doesn't appear to pose a tremendous potential risk to the health of the athlete. So on the grounds of performance enhancement, THC really isn't performance enhancing. And on the grounds of safety, this is a relatively safe compound, especially considering a lot of the other drugs that are used to treat pain in particular, but also other substances that people use to manage symptoms, especially in elite athletes. So good safety profile.
Excellent. And the last one, against the spirit of sport, that was just interesting wording. So is that really talking to stigma, or what does against the spirit of sport mean, and how did cannabis fall into that?
Yeah, that is a very, very, it was one of the most interesting things that I found about the discussions that were taking place in Lausanne when we were sitting around the IOC table with the federation heads of all these athletic programs, international federations, and talking about the spirit of sport was a real eye-opener. I found it philosophically interesting, medically interesting. And to try and distill it down, essentially, it is what it sounds like. The ideal Olympic athlete is somebody who is seen to be at the peak of their performance, the peak of their health. They represent a role model for young people, for all of us, so that, I mean, just coming out of an Olympic season, I mean, these are incredible people with incredible talents. And so the spirit of sport really speaks to, you know, that ideal that we hold of human performance. And of course, it's shaped tremendously by our context. So what was considered, you know, not an ideal athlete or athletic behavior for our athletes 50 years ago has changed dramatically. And as we watch cannabis undergo tremendous shifts in perception around its safety, around its regulation, legality, we're seeing people recognize that cannabis now is no longer required to be prohibited. Canada's embarked on this legalization program from 2018. We're beginning to see cannabis much more as a normal, regular part of life. Some people use it, some people don't, but we're really working hard to destigmatize that use and take away the criminal prohibition from it. So the idea that an athlete uses cannabis as somehow diminishing their status as an athlete really deserves to be reconsidered. And I think here specifically a couple of things. One is, you may remember back in the Whistler Winter Olympics, John Montgomery won gold in the skeleton event.
And he's walking around with a jug of beer?
Down the high street of Whistler, chugging pitchers of beer. And everyone was like, yeah, go, John, you're the man. Michael Phelps wins, I don't even remember how many, don't quote me on this, 7 Olympic gold medals in Rio or the event before that, Sydney. And then a few months later is captured on a YouTube video hitting a bong and doing this enormous bong hit. And of course, sponsorships are dropped. He's in trouble. He's called in, like a massive thing. And I think, you know, Phelps, Montgomery, cannabis, beer, like we're okay with this guy chugging pitchers of beer, and yet we're really knocked down with Michael Phelps, superhuman, taking a hit on a bong. Like this tells us that there's a challenge with the way we approach these substances and the way we interpret that with these athletic performances. And I would ask all of your audience, think carefully about what you think it means for Sha'Carri Richardson. Just because she used cannabis and it was legal for her to do so in her state, does that make her less of a human? Does that diminish your view of her as an athlete in the spirit of sport? I think that's a really key question that we need to keep asking ourselves.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because we talk about and deal with stigma a lot on this program. And it also gives me the chance to mention John Montgomery grew up in Russell, Manitoba, which is only an hour and a half from me. So, you know, another plug for the local area is fantastic. No, but the spirit of sport and the stigma, I'm glad you brought that up, because, yeah, that even outside of sport, we deal with that all the time. You know, in the I'm a practicing pharmacist, and I have people come in and ask about should I be using cannabis? And, you know, they are 78-year-old lady who, you know, has her entire life had pot is bad, marijuana is bad. But, you know, her friend of her friend said it might be good, but she's whispering it to me, you know, do you think this might be okay for me? And yeah, stigma around cannabis use is, despite legalization in Canada, is still a big issue.
And it's a paradox, Trevor, because, you know, what's the first thing that drivers of the Formula One race do when they've won the event? They pop open champagne and start spraying it around. Like, alcohol is okay, and yet we know the harms of alcohol far outweigh the harms of cannabis. And yet Shikari's tested positive for cannabis use. It's really critical. I think another thing that I want to make sure that we address here is the issue is use of cannabis and specifically THC in competition.
Okay.
These athletes are not prohibited. And we're seeing this actually transforming in a lot of other professional sports, the NFL, the NBA, the NHL. They're changing their approaches to drug testing in general, but specifically around THC testing. And some major professional leagues are actually stopping testing or not prosecuting or punishing athletes for testing positive. So it's really now in the world of elite sports, the use of THC in competition. So I think it's important to also recognize that that's not an outright ban on using the substance if you're not actually showing up at an event. But showing up to an event and then testing positive is still considered prohibited.
Yeah, and I just got so many other questions to get in the next a little bit, but just to remind our audience, one of the problems about testing, especially with cannabinoids, is they're fat soluble and they hang around in the system forever. And you guys even mentioned in your paper that the metabolite that they test for, they raised the level from 15 nanograms per mil in 2011 up to, like, raised it by 10 times up to 150, because, like you said, if someone's using it recreationally, you know, that's outside of competition, but the metabolite could be in their system for a long time after that. And, you know, we're assuming having no effect on them during the competition. So
can I just say, Trevor, quickly on that point, like, and maybe it's something that your listeners may not be fully aware of, but testing a urine level of THC, a carboxy THC, the metabolite that they're testing for, to test positive at over 150 nanograms per ml in the urine, you have to be pretty actively using cannabis. Like, for most drug tests, if you're going for a urine test for an insurance company, they're looking at levels of 25 or maybe 50 as a cutoff. So they're much lower. But to set a urine level of 150 nanograms, you almost have to be using cannabis while you're taking the urine test to get levels that high. So this is testing for fairly active current use of cannabis. So it's important to put that number in the context of what it takes to hit that level. You have to be a pretty recent user to test positive at that level.
No, that's great. Now, I'm sure we're going to get a little bit of pushback about, is cannabis really, or THC isn't really performance enhancing? And you guys do touch on it a little bit, the fact that it might help with things like anxiety, and in, we'll call them, high risk or extreme sport. You guys specifically mentioned high risk or extreme sports like skiing and surfing, and the fact you might not be as anxious as doing crazy things with your snowboard off of a big jump might be performance enhancing. But I wanted to, you did mention that in the paper, that there's some, we'll call it, around the edges, maybe possibly performance enhancing. But one of the ones I wanted to touch on, because it wasn't mentioned here, and maybe you guys didn't specifically look at it, was the shooting sports, where some, again, as a nerdy pharmacist, some drugs that are illegal in shooting, you wouldn't even think about using in other sports, like beta blockers are not allowed in shooting because it sort of calms you down. So if you're trying to keep your bead on the target, you are more able to, whereas, you know, you certainly wouldn't want to be taking a whole bunch of beta blockers before a combat sport or a 100-meter dash. And maybe there just isn't evidence on this, but besides the possible anxiety-reducing thing in, we'll call them, extreme sports, did you see anything about whether or not things like THC might possibly be in performance enhancing in things like shooting sports?
So we didn't specifically look at shooting. We did comb the literature. So one of the findings was that there wasn't a great deal of good quality data out there to talk about. So we could only really refer to what was already published. I don't recall seeing anything looking at whether, you know, an athlete in a shooting competition would be in any way enhanced if they were using cannabis and then trying to take their shot. But so it's probably just a lack of evidence rather than saying there's evidence for or against its performance enhancement. But it does raise an important issue about what do we mean by, you know, performance enhancement as a drug. And for some drugs like, you know, erythropoietin, which raises your blood red blood cell count so you can pump more oxygen in, that's clearly been shown to enhance performance. Cannabis use, and I think this is probably the major takeaway for me, given what happened with Sha'Carri Richardson, given the conversations that are happening around this, is why are athletes using cannabis for whatever purpose? Like, we don't really understand this yet. And I think the changing stigma, the reducing stigma, the changing policies around cannabis possession and distribution allow us to start having conversations with athletes, whether they're shooters or snowboarders or long distance cyclists. Why are you using cannabis in your training program? Is it really just at the end of a hard day of training that you use it to relax, or does it help you focus in your training? And we're aware of some people who actually use it as part of their training program because it helps them focus in on the what is an enduring and an arduous task of training. We need to understand this. We need to know why professional sports athletes use cannabis to better understand whether there's actually self-medication going on. Are they treating anxiety? Are they helping themselves sleep? I have friends who've been to the Olympics and have been in the Olympic Village with the athletes. And, you know, they will tell you that cannabis is not foreign to the Olympic Village. You will find it there. And so why? What is this substance doing for these athletes? And if we can understand that better, we can understand what it is they're trying to achieve. And perhaps that helps us understand whether it's really about performance or whether it's somehow enabling them to do what is highly stressful. You know, you think of an Olympic athlete who's showing up at the games after years of preparation. It's all on the line for that athlete. The pressure, the anxiety, the loss of sleep, the pain from training must be enormous. The nausea, and you know as well as anyone, Trevor, how much anti-emetic properties THC has. Is it that? We don't know. But I think we have an opportunity now to take the lid off this issue, explore it, examine it, talk to these athletes, take away the judgment and the stigma, and just better understand what's going on.
And yeah, before I run out of time, I knew I'd be able to sneak this in. So you guys did specifically look at cannabis and Paralympians. And I think that goes into the broader picture of what could you find about what athletes were actually, if they were using cannabis or THC therapeutically, you know, in the Paralympians, I think one of the quotes was, you know, if they had some quote unquote phantom limb pain or other types of neuralgias, you know, this is a legitimate use of cannabinoids. What were you finding about the Paralympians and the non-Paralympians? What, if they were using therapeutically, what they were using it for? And if they did, are they allowed to get exceptions to, you know, this is my medicine, I need it for X?
So yes, there is something called a therapeutic use exemption. And this, so any Olympic or professional athlete going into competition can apply for a TUE, which is a therapeutic use exemption, and they have to provide some documentation. As part of the work that I did with the IOC back in 2016-17 was reviewing the literature on cannabinoids and pain, in particular neuropathic pain, which was what I was studying at the time as one of the targets for cannabinoid therapy. And they concluded that, you know, for athletes who had neuropathic pain, and if they've had spinal cord injury, amputations, and a lot of Paralympians suffer from these kinds of injuries that have led to them being in the condition that they're in, are using cannabinoids when other things have not helped for their neuropathic pain. And we actually published in for WADA an example of how that therapeutic use exemption for cannabis use can be justified based on pain management principles. And then a broader paper on the, you know, just overall pain management in elite sports. So a number of papers came out of those workshops. But back to the TUE, it is possible, and a number of Paralympians, I don't know how many, it's hard to get data, but they have applied for and can show up to a professional event or an athletic event with the use exemption. They're encouraged to use dronabinol or nabilone, which are synthetic or isolated THC compounds. But if those have been tried and not work, they can have possession of cannabis for the treatment of their pain. Neuropathic pain is on the list, but if it's justifiable, they're allowed to possess and use the substance as part of their strategy for managing their condition. In competition, if needs be. So Paralympians are a really good example of where these elite athletes are using a sub-drug like cannabis and the cannabinoids to help them manage their pain so that they can perform.
Well, that was great. And I know you're a busy guy, and we really appreciate the time that you've given us on this fascinating, who doesn't like talking about the Olympics? Thing. Was there anything else that I missed? Anything else you were hoping that I'd talk about that you really want to get out to the audience about cannabis and elite athletes?
Other than just to reinforce the idea that the discussions that we're having around, you know, changing regulations about cannabis, clearly the U.S. is a huge part of this conversation. It's still federally illegal in the U.S. Until that changes, these kinds of issues like Shikari and the U.S. drug associations coming down hard on athletes using cannabis, those conversations are going to continue to happen until that U.S. regulatory approach changes. So very much looking forward to seeing some improving and more rational drug policy coming from the U.S. Also regarding products for people who are using CBD, which is perfectly allowable now, and there's no prohibition against that, but a number of products are made used for CBD products that still contain THC. They haven't been regulated. They haven't been properly tested and checked. And we know that a number of CBD products contain THC. Until those products are properly regulated and properly monitored, there's always that risk that somebody does take THC who's actually not even intending to. So I think good policy, good regulation, all of this speaks to the importance of that. It affects all of us. It also affects the athletes that we enjoy watching and that we, some of us, aspire to be like. So I'm really grateful for you to open up the conversation, and I think it's one that we need to keep having.
Dr. Mark Ware, this was fantastic. Thank you very much. I'm sure the audience will enjoy this interview as much as I have.
Cheers, Trevor. Thanks very much. I appreciate your invitation.
Kirk, what do you think of Dr. Ware?
I enjoyed this conversation. I was reading an article in Time magazine, and the article comes from June, so it's before the Olympics. It's an article that was written, these are the athletes that you want to watch out for, American athletes you want to watch out for. Of course, I started reading it, and the reason why I started reading it is that it related to this story, because one of the athletes discussed her mental health as an athlete. And what happened in the gymnastics part of the Olympics this year, the best, the ultimate gymnast, you know,
the GOAT, the greatest of all
the
time,
the greatest of all time, Simone Biles, Biles. She didn't perform many of her events due to stress. And I'm thinking to myself.
Yeah, there was. And a famous Japanese tennis player had issues as well.
And I'm thinking to myself, there's not a lot of anti-stress drugs that are good for a gymnast, right? So how does a gymnast use pharmaceuticals to calm her down? Well, we know that cannabis does soothe the soul for many, many people with anxiety. So I was thinking to myself when I heard this article, when I heard your interview, was in the sense that we need to understand why athletes use cannabis and how they use cannabis. And if they do use cannabis, is it a performance enhancer for their sport? There's so much we don't know, but what we do know is that cannabis isn't going to make a sprinter sprint faster. We know that. And we know it doesn't make a swimmer swim faster. You're just a phenomenal athlete who went out and had a couple bong hits and loses millions of dollars of endorsements because of stigma.
Yeah, so...
Crazy.
And this is nothing against Russell Manitoba's John Montgomery. But yeah, think about John Montgomery. And we love the guy. He's from Manitoba. He did great things. He still does great things. Love the guy. But everybody celebrated him walking around the Olympic Village with literal pitchers of beer.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dr. Ware mentions it too. What do Formula One races do? They spray champagne around.
Yeah.
Now, as I've said before, I am a pro-alcohol guy. I quite enjoy it. But Dr. Ware mentioned it again, so it's worth mentioning again. As pro-alcohol as I am, you don't have to do very much research to find that marijuana, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, is better for you. As a recreation, it is better for the body than alcohol, just hands down.
Yeah.
Do any amount of reading, you're going to find hands down, it's better.
See,
for
and
you.
I guess.
But in this case, and it's been this way for a long time, is the alcohol is definitely more socially acceptable.
Well, and that's the thing, and I don't want to use the word better than. As a public health nurse, I'm going to say.
Less harmful,
right, from a point of risk management. But getting back to stigma, I mean, we've talked about this often in this podcast, and I rant about it often. You know, go to the Dauphin Country Fest, and people are wandering around with children with fanny packs, you know, advertising Bombay. So they're prepared to give children fanny packs advertising alcohol, but in our province, we can't grow cannabis because they want to protect the children. We can't advertise cannabis because we want to protect the children. We want to keep cannabis away from schools. It's all such stigma. And even in high elite level sport, cannabis is being put upon. Well, my friends, Reefer Madness, the podcast, is here to stop that. Everyone should listen to this episode and make cannabis.
Well, they should. How about we don't have to stop anything. We just want to start, the conversation going.
The conversation is well started. I think it's time we start coming up with, you know, the reasons why it's still stigmatized. However, in a couple of minutes, we're going to segue and do another episode, and I'll talk more about my experiences visiting cannabis shops across Canada. But when it comes to elite sports, I love the conclusion that they made. The conclusion of the paper says medical and non-medical cannabis use among athletes reflects changing social and cultural norms and experiences. Although cannabis is a more prevalent in some athletes engaging in high-risk sports, there is no direct evidence of performance-enhancing effects in the athletes. So the potential benefits affect cannabis as part of pain management protocol, including reducing concussion-related symptoms, deserve further attention. It's a good paper, Trevor. It's a timely paper. One more reason we need to study cannabis and work on the stigma. I'm Kirk. I'm the nurse.
I'm Trevor Schufelt. I'm the pharmacist.
Well, that was a good one. Another good one, Trevor. I enjoyed that paper and that discussion.
Yeah, hopefully that's not the last time we get to talk to Dr. Ware. Have a good day, everybody. That was a good one.
So I guess that means it's my turn. It's Renee back here in the studio, and I'm going to play the song at the end of the show that was requested by Mark Ware. And that song is Coming In From the Cold by Bob Marley.
Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next. It's you, it's you, it's you I'm talking.
Any other last minute questions?
Nope, that's all good, Trevor. Thank you. Thank you for raising. And I really appreciate you bringing the Paralympians into this, because I was going to try and squeeze it in somehow. It wasn't going to be an easy segue, but I was trying to tuck it in and you just lobbed it right up there and let me hit it. So thanks for that. That was great.